Get him out, troublemaker.
The White House press secretary has repeatedly asserted that the president is not responsible for these acts.
Safety for our kind was an illusion in the 1950s, in the 1960s, the 70s, the 80s, and yet we thrived.
We are all here right now because they've paved the way.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Dar es Salaam governor announces all-out queer purge, young people against hate incriminate Trump, and shaky sanctuary found in our happy hours. Those stories and more this week because you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending November 3rd, 2018. Life for LGBTQ people in Tanzania became a virtual horror story this week. Homophobia is already rife in the Eastern African nation. Dar es Salaam Governor Paul Makonda has now called on everyone in his city, a major regional economic hub, to report suspected homosexuals to local officials so that they can be arrested. Makonda said that he's setting up a committee to monitor online sites like Facebook and Twitter to identify suspects for arrest because, as he told Agence France-Presse, these homosexuals boast on social networks. Makonda told Reuters late this week that he'd received close to 6,000 messages reporting homosexuals or homosexual behavior so far, and that he already has a list of 100 LGBTQ people to have arrested. The purge was expected to officially begin on November 5th, but a young gay Tanzanian man whom Reuters identified only as Nathan claimed that homes were being raided and arrests had already begun. Makonda's announcement has sparked panic and fear across all of queer Tanzania, not just in Dar es Salaam. "We are really scared," Nathan told Reuters. "We don't know what to do and where to go." Jeffrey Mashala, a Tanzanian queer activist now living in California, told The Guardian that even the parents of gay children are also living in great fear. Foreign pressure thwarted a similar campaign in Tanzania in 2016. Queer activists are now calling on the rest of the world to force Makonda to abandon his efforts. An appeal by some Tanzanian LGBTQ people for refuge has already gone out to the United Nations.
More than 150 lawmakers from around the world meeting in the Canadian capital of Ottawa this week approved a 7-page declaration condemning such things as female genital mutilation and child marriages, and vowing to take steps to prevent adolescent pregnancies and unsafe abortions, among a laundry list of things to combat. But the Inter-Parliamentary Union balked on addressing the treatment of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. The best they could do in the final text, identifying marginalized or vulnerable people, was to replace including LGBTI in the original draft with including sexual minorities. Objections came from a number of African and predominantly Muslim countries. A report by Interpress Service quoted an unidentified lawmaker from the Middle East. "There are certain words, like LGBTI," he said, "that are not acceptable in our country." He's not alone. At last count, being queer in more than 70 countries is against the law, not to mention having to endure pervasive and sometimes violent societal homophobia and transphobia. According to a report in the Bay Area Reporter, a move to suppress any discussion of LGBTQ rights at a meeting of the Inter-Parliamentary Union in Geneva, Switzerland, in mid-October, was led by Uganda's infamous anti-queer speaker, Rebecca Kadaga, who has guided efforts to pass an anti-homosexuality act in her country. She applauded the vote of 874 to 671 to ban debate on any LGBTQ issue, or what she called uncivilized and unchristian behaviors. Anti-queer delegates from Russia and several African, Asian, and Middle Eastern countries comprised the majority. Michael Waters is a member of South Africa's parliament, which put anti-bias protections for LGBTQ people in the nation's post-apartheid constitution in 1997 and approved marriage equality in 2006. He said on social media that the Interparliamentary Union vote was a very sad day for human rights.
The 16-nation Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe has created a fact-finding committee to investigate long-standing allegations of a deadly anti-queer purge in the predominantly Muslim Russian region of Chechnya. Credible News reports earlier this year detailed the roundup and detention of gay and bisexual men, and then later lesbians, in what some describe as concentration camps, where they were physically and mentally abused. Some died in custody. Others were eventually released into the custody of homophobic relatives and became victims of so-called family cleansing honor killings. Chechen and Russian officials, including Vladimir Putin himself, claim to have investigated the allegations and found them baseless. The United States is among the Security and Cooperation member nations, and it's one of the rare times that the Trump administration has acted on candidate Trump's pledge to
do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
The organization invoked what's called the Moscow Mechanism that allows member nations to send experts to investigate charges of human rights abuses. Officials said the response in August by the Russian delegation to inquiries about the Chechen situation was unacceptable. A statement released by the Iceland delegation on behalf of the organization said that the evasiveness had only deepened our concern that the Russian Federation is unwilling or unable to address the reports of serious human rights violations and abuse, which contribute to a climate of impunity for authorities in Chechnya. Michael Guest, senior advisor to the Council for Global Equality and a gay man, told the Washington Blade that, "I'd be surprised if Russia were to let a fact-finding mission into the country, and given the passage of time, finding concrete evidence may be a stretch." But he said that the new investigation keeps a spotlight on a tragedy that Russia would just as soon ignore.
In other news, the city of Sydney has renamed the southwestern lawn of Prince Alfred Park Equality Green, on the first anniversary of the lopsided vote of the Australian people to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. More than 30,000 equality supporters gathered in that park on November 15th last year to hear the results of the controversial postal plebiscite. In asking the City Council this week to commemorate that momentous event, Sydney Lord Mayor Clover Moore tweeted, "Love had won a landslide victory." She soon announced that the council had enthusiastically and unanimously approved her proposal. After about 12.5 million Australians cast their votes last year, that's almost 80% of those eligible, more than 61% chose marriage equality. Parliament finally made it official in December. Almost 84% of Sydneysiders voted for marriage equality in the postal plebiscite.
An estimated 130,000 people gathered in Taiwan's capital city of Taipei for annual LGBT Pride festivities on October 27th. Last year, at Asia's largest such event, they were celebrating the self-governing island's constitutional court ruling that gave lawmakers 2 years to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. Even though they have until 2019 to do that, the legislative yuan has signaled its inability to pass the necessary changes to the law. So activists on both sides have taken the matter into their own hands. Anti-equality forces struck first, qualifying petitions to put referenda on the ballot to block same-gender couples from civil marriage, and offering them less than equal civil unions. Pro-queer forces countered by then qualifying a marriage equality referendum. So this year, there was a mixture of anticipation and anxiety at the Taipei Pride celebration. Taiwan voters go to the polls on November 24th to consider those competing referenda both for and against marriage equality. Referenda cannot overturn constitutional court rulings, but the government is required to propose laws that mirror referenda outcomes. If a civil unions law were enacted instead of marriage equality, it's likely that the issue would wind up back in Taiwan's constitutional court.
And finally, from the U.S. When Will They Ever Learn file, far-right Iowa preacher Paul Doerr posted video on Facebook in mid-October of him burning queer-supportive children's books outside the Orange City Public Library. He specifically checked out books that would be read during a Pride Week drag queen story time at the library. Doerr heads an organization that claims to fight against moral evil to advance the kingdom of Christ, explaining in the video that he was doing what German church leaders should have done in 1933. Doerr said that you should all be ashamed of yourselves and repent. You can probably guess what happened next. The Orange City Public Library announced this week that they'd received more than 200 replacement books from donors, so many that they intend to stock the shelves of other nearby public libraries. Several GoFundMe pages and Facebook fundraisers have also raised thousands of dollars for the library, and donations to Orange City Pride have increased, too. Considering that Dorr burned about $50 worth of books, that's quite a resounding rebuke. A spokesperson for the library told the Associated Press that it would deal with Dorr by following official policy for stolen or lost books. A certified letter with an itemized bill and a notification of criminal action is sent when a book is 60 days overdue. The library director can contact the police or county attorney if the borrower doesn't respond. Justin Scott, the Iowa State Director for American Atheists, sponsored one of the larger online fundraisers. He said that the library actually asked him to redirect some of the donations to other libraries and queer youth organizations. The overall response to the book burning, Scott said, is uniting Christians and atheists to show that they have more in common than we think.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending November 3rd, 2018. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazor, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the always updated thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm John Dyer V.
Friends grow to circles. With a gay bar nearby, we never needed to be totally alone.
How grateful we are to have you in our tribe.
The sweet escapes and the hard work of winning our rights after we take stock of the tide of hate we're swimming against.
If you see somebody getting ready to throw a tomato, knock the crap out of them, would you? Seriously.
I'd like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
Get out of here. Get him out.
If you do, I'll defend you in court. Don't worry about it.
I don't know if I would have done well, but I would have been boom, boom, boom. I'll beat that.
Get him out. Troublemaker.
Yes, he deserved it. The next time we see him, we might have to kill him.
Can I be honest with you? It adds to the flavor. It really does. Makes it more exciting.
Not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch. You also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
Hate speech, let's dance for peace. We should not hate each other, we are all just kids. One step to the front, let's change ourselves. Raise your hands up against hate, we dance.
From the campaign trail to the corridors of executive power, the steady stream of hateful, violence-tinged invective flowing down from the top has changed the tone of political discourse in the United States. It's made an impression on the youth commentators of Outcasting Overtime, and they think it's also made an impression on those who would turn invective into action.
This is Outcasting Overtime, a feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Lucas, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcaster Dhruv talks about the recent pipe bomb assassination attempts of high-profile liberal leaders and a recent mass shooting in a Pittsburgh synagogue. Both of these attacks indirectly target minority groups and may have been fueled by President Trump's hateful rhetoric over the past few years.
At the end of October, we witnessed one of the worst strings of assassination attempts in recent American history when a Florida man sent pipe bombs to prominent Democrats. A few days later, a man walked into a Pittsburgh synagogue and killed 11 people in one of the worst anti-Semitic acts in recent history. It is not a huge leap in logic to conclude that these attacks were fueled in part by the legitimization of hate coming from the White House. First, the attempted bombings. 14 pipe bombs were sent out to prominent members of the political minority party, including targets such as former President Barack Obama, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Robert De Niro, and George Soros. When the alleged maker of the bombs was apprehended, authorities found a list of over 100 other prominent liberal targets. The people who had received the bombs had all been singled out and attacked by President Trump in tweets and in speeches. Many conservative news sources outlandishly attempted to blame Democrats, saying that Democrats had actually sent the bombs. It was found that the alleged bomber was a devoted Trump supporter, as could be seen by the multitude of stickers adorning the exterior of his van. Then, on Saturday, October 27th, Robert Bowers entered the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh and opened fire on the worshippers gathered there. 11 people were killed. the shooting has already been designated as a hate crime, based on the fact that Bowers spewed violent anti-Semitic messages while committing the horrendous shooting. In addition, it was found that Bowers was a white nationalist who often spewed hate on far-right fringe websites. The White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, has repeatedly asserted that the president is not responsible for these acts, and the president has uttered words condemning the attacks. But the president has uttered a much greater number of words over a much longer period of time, fanning the flames of both uncivil rhetoric and division in America. There is absolutely no way that the president does not deserve some of the blame following these horrendous acts. President Trump may not have pulled the trigger in these shootings, he may not have addressed the packages of bombs, but his incendiary rhetoric has enabled people to embrace their hate and express it publicly, be it against liberals, immigrants, Jewish people, or the LGBTQ community. When people who harbor these vile thoughts believe that they will not be denounced for their hateful beliefs and acts, it is almost inevitable that this kind of thing will happen. President Trump's refusal to condemn the people responsible for spreading hate in our country, such as the neo-Nazis in Charlottesville and the various white supremacists that he has endorsed, directly contribute to the normalization of this hate. The office of the president should be a beacon of the American spirit, a symbol of the best of what America can be and what can happen. Instead, this president is fraying the fabric of understanding, openness, and liberty in America, thus endangering the American dream, the futures of minorities, and democracy itself. This hate is dangerous for all minorities and for all Americans, and it needs to end.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Our assistant producer is Josh Valley, and our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Stop hate speech, let's dance for peace. We should not hate each other, we are all just kids. One step to the front, let's change ourselves. Raise your hands up against hate, we dance.
Stop hate speech, let's dance for peace. And let's change ourselves. Against hate, we dance.
Are you signed up for our weekly email messages describing the specific content of each program? Email tworadio@aol.com. And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will. That's tworadio@aol.com.
So this is Happy Hour. Two drinks for the price of one. People laughing and having fun.
What a great place to be.
Unfortunately, even the horror of hate as shocking as the synagogue massacre in Pittsburgh does not end the cycle. An Orthodox rabbi in New Jersey instructed his congregants not to attend a memorial vigil for the Pittsburgh victims because their deaths were retribution for the memorial vigil the targeted synagogue had held for the victims of the Pulse massacre. This Way Out queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason recently read a book dedicated to the people who were killed at the Pulse. Our Happy Hours, LGBT Voices from the Gay Bars, puts that tragedy into the context of queer cultural history.
I was intrigued when I heard about Our Happy Hours, LGBT Voices from the Gay Bars, a collection published by Flashpoint Publications in 2017 and edited by renowned lesbian writers Renee Bess and Lee Lynch. But I did not read it until recently. This book was both dedicated to the victims of the Pulse nightclub tragedy and born from that tragedy. Ultimately, Our Happy Hours is a sobering book. Bess's introduction resonated deeply with me. This book's expedition grew during the pre-dawn hours of June 13, 2016, when so many of us watched the media's coverage of the massacre at the Pulse nightclub. That mass shooting pierced the soul of every LGBTQ person who knew the experience of finding safety, joy, and personal validation in a space where it was okay to slow drag with your same-gender partner. For a moment, we'd all been in that Orlando club, or we knew we could have been there. Co-editor Lind stressed the importance of bars in LGBTQ culture by mentioning the Stonewall Inn, which has been designated as a National Historic Landmark. In 1969, the modern LGBTQ civil rights movement was born at this gay bar when patrons fought back against a routine police raid. As she writes, it's fitting their monument should be at a bar. Human communities form wherever they can, spontaneously and eventually develop traditions. How lush as they can be, at times they were glorious, glorious. The music may have been loud past bearing, but we danced all night. Under the glitter balls, we saw ourselves reflected in our peers like nowhere else. I was not the only shy one, and eventually a few strangers would become friends. Friends grew to circles. With a gay bar nearby, we never needed to be totally alone. Despite the fact that it pays tribute to the importance of bars in a community, the collection does not glorify its origins. More than a few writers talk about the seedy results of alcoholism, but all agree the bars were a starting point for meeting, often for being loved, and for learning about each other. In a message for Steve, esteemed lesbian writer and editor Catherine V. Forrest writes, "In the many, many years since that May night, friendship and camaraderie with gay men have taken their rich place in my life. Our two communities needed that time apart in the 70s to explore our own identities and culture, and then the devastation of AIDS brought us all together. You're the first gay man I ever knew. You're the first to show me the promise of what we have since brought into each other's LGBT lives." Noted lesbian writer Karen Callmaker writes that she found herself in bookstores, but was grateful for the role that bars played in LGBTQ history. In her piece titled "My Nose Pressed Against the Glass of History," she writes, "The Pulse Massacre at one of our safe spaces, a queer nightclub, was a gut-punching reminder. Yes, we are stronger together. Sometimes it's not strong enough. When it's not strong enough, we need each other more than ever. My daughter comforted friends online. I despaired that safe spaces are still an illusion. And I reminded myself safety for our kind was an illusion in the 1950s, and yet we have thrived. It was an illusion in the 1960s, the 70s, the 80s, and yet we thrived. We thrive." This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
I'm Roman Kalinin from Moscow. You are listening to This Way Out,
the showpiece of the homosexual movement in the United States.
Оставайтесь на нашей волне.
Stay on our wavelength.
The roots of hate run deep, but the resistance to hate has been long and strong. London's Gay Star News celebrated the heroes of the struggle during LGBTI Founders Week, and a 78-year-old straight ally grandmother was commissioned to write an official theme song. Singer-songwriter Sherry Gray is a licensed therapist in Nashville, Tennessee.
We had lived in a storm cloud. They called us a sin. Who we were, whom we loved, had told them we don't fit in. Through our storm shone a rainbow, and angels sang all above. There are far more than two ways to be and to love. Then with courage and strength, our angels broke through that storm. Our movement was founded, and our community was born. Stand on the shoulders of our founders today. We are all here right now because they've paved the way. And we thank you for loving us just as we are, because you've been with us. We have made it this far. You vowed we would not have to do this alone. You joined in our cause, and you've made it your own. Then with weapons of reason, wisdom, and words, you shatter those lies that so many had heard. You wrote letters, you made speeches, then you worked to pass laws. Yes, with blood, sweat, and tears, you have toiled for our cause. You were right there beside us through riots and raids, when our families disowned us, when our friends died from AIDS. And some of you have made that supreme sacrifice for our cause you believed in. You gave up your lives, whether members or allies. No words can describe how grateful we are to have you in our tribe. You are our founders, and we're in your debt. Your strength and your courage we will never forget. And we now have a family of choice worldwide. We honor all founders with passion and pride.
That was Nashville's Sherry Gray singing the song she composed for the UK's LGBTI Founders Week. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael LeBeau and John Dyer V, produced with Brian DeShazer, and from Outcasters Lucas and Driv, produced by Mark Sophos. Hate Fighters, Sherry Gray, and Ted Hawkins performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the Estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Thanks for helping to keep our 30-year streak going at thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media and wherever you get your podcasts. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2BBB Bellingen, New South Wales, WRUW Cleveland, Ohio, KDVS Davis, California, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.